At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Welcome to Vega's World! It's time to party, and I'm your most excellent host, JC Vega. Thanking you all for tuning in. We got a lot to cover this week. Some comic book talk with Power Rangers Prime from Boom Comics, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from IDW Comics. We're going to get into some Alien Earth news. We're going to talk a little bit about Daredevil Born Again, as well as some other topics. But before we dive into all those fun things, let's talk a little bit about a movie I saw this past week. Academy Award winning Anora, directed by Sean Baker, starring Mikey Madsen. She won for Best Actress. The film, in general, won for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actress, Best Original Screenplay, the ones that I care about the most. And I was intrigued because, you know, I hear a lot of good things, and her, Mikey Madsen's performance is phenomenal. And sure enough, she was. Now, for those of you who may not know what Anora is, let me give you a brief summary. It's about a stripper from New York who marries a wealthy son of a Russian oligarch, and chaos ensues. Now, for me, watching the film, the first 45 minutes was a slog to get through. Like, I know you got to set up the relationship and all that, but even with what they did, I didn't feel we adequately set it up enough, or enough for me to believe that, yeah, this is a true couple. She really likes this guy. She really cares about him enough to marry him. I mean, they only know each other for a few days or so, but still, like, around the time when his godfather and American handler Tauros shows up with his henchmen Igor and Garnick, that's when the movie gets really interesting and it gets funny and stuff happens. I was intrigued. And it was funny too. While I was watching it, I was texting my nephew Chase, who, if you listen to Nosferatu, you know he was on that episode with me. I'm his favorite uncle. There's no debate about that one. Just kidding. But really, though, and he's a big fan of it. He's a big film buff and appreciates fine cinema. So I was talking to him about it, and I was like, man, I'm about to tap out. He's like, no, stick with it. Trust me. You're going to like it. It's going to get good. Just, you got to ride with it. And to his credit, he was right. But at the same time, like, if you're not a big indie fan and can appreciate slow builds and cinema in its truest form without, like, the Hollywood gaga, then this might not be for you. Mikey Madsen doesn't get set on fire in this movie. That's good. You know, if you've seen Scream and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, yeah, she gets set on fire. So she does not continue the trend, like how Sean Bean always dies when he is in a film. Mikey Madsen does not get set on fire. So good for her for breaking that streak. But, you know, if I had to rate it, though, overall, a 2.5 out of 5, if we want to put a rating to it. And in saying that, again, I'm on the fence about it because the latter half of the movie I enjoyed, and it was interesting. But that first half, man, that was a bit of a rough one, if I gotta be honest with you. But that's it on that one. Power Rangers Prime, the sequel/soft reboot for Power Rangers in the Boom universe. It's the original run went for about 8 years, started by Kyle Higgins, who created Radiant Black, wrote on Teen Titans, had a tremendous run. Well, Power Rangers Prime is taken over by Melissa Flores, who writes in the massive universe helmed by Kyle Higgins. She wrote the Dead Lucky and the Radiant Pink short series, as well as a few issues of the original Boom Power Rangers. And I gotta say, well, I said before that the series fell off a little bit after Kyle Higgins left. There were some unique ideas that I liked. I liked how they explained Trini, Zach, and Jason leaving the team and going to the Peace Conference, which ended up actually them becoming the Omega Rangers. I liked the fact that they made Matt, who was an on-again, off-again love interest for Kimberly, the new Green Ranger. That was pretty cool. Wasn't a big fan of the latter stories, but that's neither here nor there. But Power Rangers Prime starts off with a bang, and it is not letting up. I've read the first four issues for the series so far. The fifth one came out this past Tuesday, so I'm looking forward to getting my hands on that. But the basic premise for the series so far is that the Eltarian race has come to Earth and has it under their occupation. They first came to help defend Earth from invading alien forces. It was like in like the early 50s or something. And that they agreed after that, that they would become, Eltar would take over essentially and rule over the planet, defend them from other invading forces. Now peaceful and prosperous. They've banned Power Rangers. They're considered a high level threat. And Lauren Sheba is the Red Ranger from Power Rangers Samurai. She's on the run trying to find her family. And she gets found by an Eltarian in like at the dumpster. And he takes her in. Him and his roommate hide her from the guardians and police force. It's really interesting stuff. And like now they're starting to get the team together. They've got a couple of friends. Like I said, one Eltarian kid, his roommate, another friend of theirs. And they essentially band together out of circumstances. At least one of them is reluctant for various reasons. But the one interesting thing that I've gotten so far is Rita Repulsa's role in all of this. She crash lands from the moon in a large space dumpster. She got a really cool white attire, with, like her long flowy white hair. She's got her devious qualities to her. She wants to take over Earth, but in a different way. Or I say take over. She said she wants to liberate Earth. Now, in the Boom comics, the original series, that was her idea of what she wanted for Earth, is that, you know, they just fall into line in her rule and like let her conquer this world and control it. It's kind of a twist on that, and she actually helps give the Power Rangers Prime their powers. So that was really interesting, and I'm curious to see where that story element goes, because it's very different. Bulk on the, from, you know, the show and the original series, is on the police force, and he kind of reluctantly teams up with her. If you decide to read it, and you know, I'll let you figure out how that comes to be. But no, it's just really fascinating, really done well. Michael E. Young's artwork is tremendous. I love his Rita Repulsa design with the all-white suit and how she looks. The Power Rangers Prime, the Prime Ranger suits, they're phenomenal, man. I can't say enough good things about it. It's got a little hint of Mighty Morphin to it with a twist, you know, because it got to make it look way different. But no, it's so cool, man. And I'm loving the story so far. Like, I'm kind of upset that I didn't get the fifth issue earlier while I was reading it, because, you know, things happened. Life has got a life, you know. But it's really been fun, and I'm loving this twist on the Power Rangers lore, and they're not beholden to the show, so that's really good. You get a lot of more creative freedom, creative license to do whatever it is you want to do. Melissa Flores is doing a tremendous job with her writing so far. I loved some of the issues she did in the original run, but this one, yeah, we're starting off hot, and I hope we get more twists and turns, and to see how, because one of the Rangers, kind of spoiler, I guess, is the son of an Eltarian general, I guess. She's like a high-ranking official in the, you know, Eltarian government. So that'll be an interesting twist to see how she deals with that. Her son being a Power Ranger and them being outlawed, essentially. So I kind of wonder if Zordon is going to make an appearance at some point, or if they allude to him in any sense, because Rita Repulsa, obviously knows Power Rangers exist, knows she's on Earth, but it's like, all right, what's changed in this reboot or new universe, essentially? Because before, like I've said, I've seen articles that said that it's a soft reboot, that what's happened before in the old series, still existed and still there and slightly play a role in this somewhat, but it's a completely new deal. So I'm sure I will give more in detail into that when we are further along in the comic book series. Alien Earth. Alien Earth. Let's talk about Alien Earth on March 22nd. An X-Post fans caught a glimpse of the titular alien xenomorph species, and it was in, I guess, one of the spaceships, and one of the crew members is in a little chamber similar to what we see in the original Alien. Like, I love how they're going back to the old school 80s aesthetic and paying homage to the first film with its designs. So that was really cool. And you get a hint that he's with the company, or, I'm sure he's under Weyland-Yutani control. It's probably an android. And essentially, it's like, crew members are dead, or we're headed to Earth. And like, the alien kills one of the last surviving crew members. So, Noah Hawley, who's the showrunner, also said that he's expecting this to be 10 years worth of his life. So we could see a lot more to come. Season 2 has already been announced. They've already greenlit it. So they're, I guess, FX is very high, thinks highly of the show and what they're doing with it, and I can't wait for that to come out. I hope they stick the landing. I hope we don't get any Ridley Scott Gaga. I'm tired of Ridley Scott and this universe and his hold on it. So, but yeah, the clip was really intense for that short thing. You could find it up on, Twitter or somewhere. I'm sure it's probably on YouTube. You can find it and enjoy for yourself and see what I'm talking about and how it fits the aesthetic from that first film, at least with the spaceship I've seen so far. And there's hints that we're gonna get some crazy xenomorph hybrids. I mean, I'm sure they're landing on Earth. And this is set 2 years before the original film and 10 years before the prequels. So do with that what you will. But again, with that being mine, I hope they ignore anything to do with Prometheus. Please, for the love of God, like Ridley Scott, stay away. Or somebody get him away. Don't let Indiana Jones be in this. If something Prometheus is in this, I'm gonna be upset. I'm gonna smash things. No, I'm not, but I'm just gonna be unimpressed and unamused. Speaking of Twitter, though, it was announced this past week that Ironheart will be debuting on Disney Plus June 24th of 2025, and that reaction was met with utter disdain from certain angry nerdy incels because, it's another DII hire. I feel like I'm a broken record because last week I was very disgusted with the fact that they were upset that Captain America is black, and now they are upset that Ironheart is a black girl. And why do we need a female Iron Man, even though it's, again, an original character? It's not replacing Iron Man. It's something totally different. They have introduced her in Wakanda Forever. I'm gonna tune in. I'm curious to see how that goes, but like, it's beyond sad at this point. I don't want to keep making this a segment on the show where I'm just calling out bigots for the various stupid shit that they're upset about, but like, ridiculous. It got so bad that they had to, edit the post where people can't reply to it because of how much hate it was getting and how, like, the page that posted it was like baffled at how ridiculous these people are with their hatred towards this character. And they're just like, I'm not gonna watch it because it's a black girl. Like, Jesus Christ, I'm sorry for you, sir. I don't know how long you've been living here, Perhaps you've been in a coma since the Civil War. Not Civil War, but Civil Rights Movement. But, you know, black people are around. The black, there's going to be black characters in shows. I mean, that's another thing. Like, now that I think about it, it's absurd you're upset that Ironheart is a black girl. You're upset that there's an Iron Man black character. But guess what? Rhodey, War Machine, has been around since fucking Iron Man. In the first film of the Marvel Universe, this should not be a surprise to you. I don't understand why that upsets you, but not the other thing. What gives? Why are we having select? Is it the fact that it's not only a black person, but a female black person that it just ruffles your feathers? Again, I don't want to make this a recurring thing. Hopefully, there's nothing else stupid that comes out in that regard where I gotta talk about something like this again. Or maybe I'll just choose to ignore it and just focus on the more positive stuff because I don't want this to be about that. I don't want to give those people the time of day in general, especially on this show. So that's that. But yeah, June 25th, it's coming out whether you like it or not. And hopefully it's good. Again, like, I'm not a fan of the Marvel trend of like, we get this one good movie and then a bad show, or this one bad movie and then this really good show. Like, it's been hit or miss. Hopefully it finds its footing. Like, Daredevil Born Again is really, really good. That's another win in their belt. Let's shift from American racial issues to Japanese cultural insensitivity by American gaming company. I am referring to Assassin's Creed Shadows. And the Prime Minister called some parts of the game insulting to the country of Japan because in the game, apparently, there was a video depicting characters destroying a shrine. And a Democratic Party member, Hiroyuki Kondo, shared to Twitter and said, "Wake up, Ubisoft defender, and hear our voice. What kind of Assassin's Creed game destroys an actual religious site? Japanese culture is consumed but receives no respect." And here's an example, and he posted the clip of it. Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba had this to say about it. "I would like to discuss with the Ministry of Economy, Trade and Industry, the Ministry of Education, Culture, Sports, Science and Technology, and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs what to do legally." He then followed up by saying, "It is absolutely unacceptable to graffiti a shrine. It is nothing but an insult to the country." And according to the article from CBR, it says that Ubisoft made a different version ahead of the Japanese release, however, and they released a hot patch that will not allow gamers to destroy certain items within the game, such as shrines and other stuff. And yeah, man, like, this game was getting a lot of flack before it even came out. You know, again, some people were upset with the use of a black character in feudal Japan and whatnot, but, you know, they're gonna play in either way, right? But as far as the cultural insensitivity, I can get it. You know, Japan's already kind of voiced their displeasure about the game in other instances, so this one is completely understandable, and that's good on Ubisoft that they decided to fix it and sow some goodwill. But, you know, I don't know if that's going to save the game necessarily, but there are going to be fans of it. There are going to be people who play it. And on that front, at least they did something right. The movie Prey, directed by Dan Trachtenberg, the prequel to the Predator movie, is teased about getting a sequel from star Amber Midthunder. She said, "I would be happy to do another one. I love Dan Trachtenberg with my whole heart." She also said, "I love that world, I love that character, and I think there are some fun ideas out there that I've heard that are very cool. I'm really excited." And there's been talks about it since the release of Prey in 2022. It's in development so far. There's not much else news on that. However, Elle Fanning is going to be the lead in Predator Badlands that's supposed to come out in theaters, supposedly. There's also going to be another film released on Hulu as part of the expanding universe from Prey, essentially, within the Predator universe. So That'll be interesting. I'm a big fan of the Predator series. Predator 2 is a guilty pleasure. Predators, I'm fond of certain aspects of it. The original iteration Robert Rodriguez wrote with Dutch being involved sounded really cool, and I wish we would have got it, but he became governor, and that was a little hard to do at that time. And Fox or whoever, yeah, I think Fox owned the rights at that time, wanted to go a different way. So it's a fun little YouTube video on that one, so go find that to hear that one. But I can't wait for these next few movies to come out. But Prey will be on Peacock April 1st, I think, as well in conjunction to Hulu. But so if you have Peacock, like one of the eight people out there who have it, good for you. You get to watch it there. Daredevil Born Again, Episode 4, titled Sic Semper Systema. I think I'm saying that right. I don't know. But Episode 4, nonetheless, has come out, and we have seen the return of Frank Castle, played by Jon Bernthal, and his scene with Charlie Cox. Phenomenal, man. Great stuff. Definitely reminded me of their first encounter in season two of the Netflix series. I say it's the MCU debut, but really it's the return, because Marvel has stated that the Defender saga is a part of the MCU. It's in phase three retroactively. So that's pretty cool. But no, this episode was man, that again, that scene between Frank and Matthew Murdock is the highlight of the episode. Something else happened that I want to say I'm surprised about just a little bit, but at the same time, considering who it is, I really can't be. I really shouldn't be. I should have known better. But it's fun. But the sweet thing is that next week, this upcoming week, rather, we don't get one episode. We're gonna get two. Episodes 5 and 6 will be released 9 p.m. Eastern. I gotta tell you, I am so glad we're getting a double episode drop instead of one. I hate this week-to-week stuff. I get it. It's how TV's been done since forever before streaming. But I need it, man. I need it. This show is so good, so fantastic. Yeah, I know a lot of people out there are like, it's not exactly the Netflix series, but like you can't expect a one-to-one recreation. It's gotta fit more to the MCU, but it's still pretty gritty. It's still pretty dark. Frank Castle's scene with Matt was pretty damn compelling, and it shows how they are very similar yet opposing in how they approach the same goal. And after March 25th, we only got 3 episodes left to go, so that'll be so fun. I can't wait. I wonder how it's all gonna fit together. And I think it's already been greenlit for another season as well, which is great because I love it, man. Charlie Cox is so good as Matt Murdock. I know at the beginning of the season he renounced his Christianity, his faith. I wonder if he's going to get that back by the end of the season, or if we're going to see him reconnect with it in season two, because that's a big part of his character, man. I think it's been a big part of his character since Frank Miller wrote him. It gave an interesting dichotomy of somebody who's a vigilante and teeters that line between, wanting to kill people or wanting to save people, and just how he deals with all that stuff of being a vigilante while also being a Catholic. That's, I don't think they touch on religion too much in comic books, so that's a good one. So we'll see on that. I don't want to give too much away, 'cause the man, the show's so good. On that same note, Invincible, I've finished season 3 the other day. I liked it. I feel it was a big step up from season 2. I'm very intrigued with Oliver's story arc and where he's going. It's the baby brother of Mark, and he kind of has shades of their dad and how he feels that murder is not wrong if it saves people. Like, we are better than those people. We should take them out and all that stuff. And he's got to learn, a lesson that, like, that's not necessarily how you should view things. And the Debbie's trying to break him of that cycle. Mark is trying to help him out. The Invincible War, as it was known in the comics, was a fine episode. I know that Spawn and other characters from the Image universe showed up in the comics, but they're not in the show, so temper your expectations on that one. But as far as an adaptation for television goes, it was a fine episode and how they handled that whole arc. Conquest, played by Jeffrey Dean Morgan, one of my favorite actors today, was a lot of fun. I love the meta humor in the fact that it's Negan versus Glenn part two, in a sense, if you want to call it a part two, because I mean it really wasn't a fight the first time, you know what I mean? We're not gonna talk about it. It's a sore subject still, for me, and I guess for a lot of people, because after that episode, a lot of people tuned out for The Walking Dead. But it's really cool to have him in the show. I mean, it seems like it's a pretty much a Walking Dead alumni affair going on here. I mean, Steven Yeun plays Mark Grayson, King Ezekiel's actor, whose name escapes me right now. I apologize for that, but he's also on the show. But yeah, man, we're building up to a war with the Viltrumites and a lot of other moving parts. Aaron Paul, when he came on as Powerplex, that episode was gripping. His story arc was tragic. And what that man went through in that episode, we went back in time, flash forward, or flashback rather, to Mark and his father, Nolan, Omni-Man, fighting in Chicago. And this kind of deals ramifications with that fight. And Aaron Paul, man, that man cannot catch a break when it comes to playing characters who just go through some shit. But it was a lovely episode, and yeah, again, overall, very good season. And they put a lot of blocks in place for what's to come in season four. I think season four is almost done, or in the process, or is done, rather. I'm not too sure. But they say it's going to be a short turnaround between this season and next season, because I think it was like a year or two, maybe three, between season one and two. So the more with that show is the better. And I gotta read the comic book at some point. I don't want to get spoiled with what's to come. I know they do a lot of things different. I mean, between The Walking Dead, Robert Kirkman and the staff made a lot of different choices on that show, and they've done a lot of different things, apparently, when it comes to Invincible itself. I just don't want to come in with any preconceived notions for future seasons. I want to go in completely blind and just take it as it is, and once the show's over, I will consider getting into the comics and reading that and seeing how that story unfolded. I love that, man. I love the comparison and contrast, the differences between certain mediums, between television and comics. That's a lot of fun. And finally, my discussion thoughts on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles series from IDW. It's the reboot of the comic book line. The original line went for 150 issues. Sophie Campbell had the last 50 issues. And to say that I was dissatisfied with what happened after issue 100 would be an understatement. I was not a big fan of Mutant Town, and I was from things that I've gathered that it wasn't supposed to go as long as it did, but Tom Campbell ended up working on the last run in Evolution, or Revolution rather. Excuse me. I can't. Words are hard, people. They're very hard. I don't know what it is. My brain's not wanting to function. But regardless, things got changed and they stayed on to finish the series. And I wasn't necessarily a big fan of one plot point and the final issue of that, where basically Donatello went back in time to ensure that they got reincarnated. Previously, it's been hinted that the Utroms had something to do with it because they were at war with the Shredder and all that stuff, but they kind of retconned or repurposed the origin of the IDW version of Turtles, and I'm not a big fan of that. But regardless, this new series, man, oh man, it is dark, it is gritty, it is back to basics. It has all the fun things that I love about the classic Mirage, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and so much more. The writer for the series is Jason Aaron. He has worked on Ghost Rider, Wolverine, Punisher Max, Thor, The Avengers. He co-created the character Gore the God Butcher and introduced the concept of Jane Foster as Thor. This is the first time I've read anything he's written, and I love it. In the first four issues, the story is titled Return to New York, and each individual issue deals with one particular brother. Like, the first issue deals with Raphael, who's in prison. The next issue was Michelangelo, who is a TV star now in Japan. And the third issue was Leonardo in India and him trying to find himself. The fourth one was Donatello, who was being held captive by a nefarious group that had mutants in an underground fighting ring against humans. Really gnarly stuff. And that poor guy went through some shit in that issue himself and seems to have lost his mind a little bit and hasn't been right since his trip through time, because he was the one who made sure they got reincarnated or brought back and all that and fiddled with things in time. So yeah, he's feeling all funky, but no. You get individual time with those characters. You get to see their personalities and how things have changed for them since the end of Volume 1. The first four issues had different artists for those issues to give the brothers their unique takes and styles. That was cool. 6 and 7 has Ron Ferreira as the artist. I'm guessing he's going to be the main artist for the series for however long, but no, the tone it's set, like, it feels, like, again, it feels back to Mirage style to me, in a sense, with how dark and gritty it is, especially with what Donatello was dealing with. But they had narration for every issue so far, and it felt like a big cross between Batman and Daredevil in that sense. And I know Daredevil has been a inspiration for the Ninja Turtles dating back to Mirage, but it's even more evident in the new villain in this volume. It is Hieronymus Hale, who is a district attorney. He's a big old stout dude who almost looks like the Kingpin. It's so funny, but he's got hair. And he's got a similar backstory where he's just a meek, mild-mannered child. He felt unnoticed, and all he wanted was for people to take notice of him and know he existed, even if it meant being bullied. But now he's the DA, and he's taken over New York, essentially, with the help of the Foot Clan, who are now essentially the police force in New York City. And his big main goal is to get rid of mutants. There are 6 boroughs now, the 6th one being Mutant Town. So Mutant Town's still kind of there, but it hasn't been at the forefront, and I hope it stays that way for a while, because, again, I was not a big fan of Mutant Town story arc with Sophie Campbell, and I love Sophie Campbell's artwork, but as a writer, I feel that should be left to somebody else. But Jason Aaron delivered on all the promises he made before the series began, and I can't wait for the next issue. Issue 8 should be coming out later this month, if not early next month. I'm not sure. I should know better, but let me be honest with you. I go to my nearest comic book shop every so often and get my pull list, because I don't want to say can't be bothered, but life is busy and I can't go almost every single week to get my comics. So, you know, once a month, just go in and get what I need towards the end of a month or so. So, but now the series delivers, man. It is a throwback, and I love that. Everyone has this misconception that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is a kid product, and it was not a kid product, at least in Mirage days. It was a parody of the dark, gritty stuff at first, but, you know, it dealt with a lot of mature themes and loss, grief, cycle of violence, and all that stuff. So this comic book is definitely living up to the hype, and definitely a step up from Volume 1, especially the latter half. After Issue 100, it felt like they were just kind of coasting along, just trying to get to the milestone. And it's impressive that it's lasted 150 issues. I think that's the only comic book, as far as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles goes, that has gone that long. So that is a nice record to have. I'm probably gonna have to check out Jason Aaron's other work. I mean, if he wrote The Punisher, I know that man deals with dark and gritty pretty well then, and considering Frank Castle's character traits and all that, so it should be no surprise that he's really good at Ninja Turtles. If you're a comic book fan, I suggest you check out that either get single issues or, like I do with most other comic books, wait for the trade when they collect the first 4 to 6 volume issues, excuse me. I'm sure you will not be disappointed. If you want to check out a comic book, if you've never read one, I think that'd be the one to read if you're into dark, gritty action. And in the coming issues, I'm sure and anxious to read why exactly Karai has broken the truce she had with the Turtles. So, but it's got my seal of approval. I love it. I love Power Rangers Prime. Next week, I'm gonna cover the restart of Radiant Black after the Catalyst War and who the Radiant Black is. The big compendium, it covers the first 30 issues, or 31 rather. I believe, I'm not really sure the number, but it has that's on Amazon right now. You should get that. It's a great series. It's a homage to tokusatsu, Japanese, suit monster thing. It's Power Rangers are Kamen Rider. If you're into those, you'll be into this. It's an Americanized version of that, but with a definite twist. It feels like Invincible, as Robert Kirkman has said, and other people have sang its praises. So I can't wait to read that new issue. But actually, next week is going to be the Three Ninjas High Noon at Mega Mountain Watch Along, where Kaden Green and Aaron Nova return to Vega's world. And after we get done with that viewing, in 2 weeks' time, we are going to be doing a double Dragon's Watch Along as part of our 90s Watch Along series. And after we watch one of those movies, we are going to spin the wheel, because I have a little wheel app with all the movies on it, and we're going to spin the wheel and get our next movie. I hope you guys join us for that. I hope you also enjoyed this episode and enjoyed my thoughts on comic books, as well as some of the TV shows and movies, even my displeasure with a certain segment of the world and their feelings on Ironheart. But you can find me at the JC Vega on all the social media platforms. Go to ProWrestlingTees.com and buy my merchandise. You got one shirt that says punk rock, another one that says rainbow bright. That's a reference from a friend of mine, Nicole. Thank you for that one. It's funny, and I'm going to use it all the damn time. But yeah, you can go there. Go to Vegas World Pod on Instagram to follow us. You can leave your questions, comments there, as well as vegasworldpodcast@gmail.com. Again, I am JC Vega. Thank you. Party on. Goodbye. Good evening. Good morning. Good night.